This is Vatican Radio. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. On Thursday, January 23rd, the Ambassador of the United States of America to the Holy See, Kenneth Hackett, is set to inaugurate an exhibition here in Rome marking 30 years of diplomatic relations between the United States of America and the Holy See. So if you've ever wondered how the land lies in terms of diplomatic relations between the Holy See and the United States, why don't you listen on to our expert in this field? He's Jesuit historian Professor Gerald Fogarty from the University of Virginia in the United States. Professor Fogarty begins by telling us how he first got interested in diplomatic relations between the United States and the Holy See. Stay tuned.
Yes, it really began with my dissertation when I was a graduate student. Then I realized that almost nobody worked on it. My dissertation was on this movement called Americanism at the end of the 19th century. It had to do with religious liberty, but religious liberty in the United States was never condemned by the Holy See. They came close, but they never did. So therefore, what happened at Vatican II with religious liberty represented a development of theology, not so much real development of doctrine. But right after the American Revolution, there were overtures made by the Holy See's government to the minister to France, who happened to be Benjamin Franklin, who had no religion whatsoever, but he was the United States minister to France, whether or not his country, his government, had any objection to the appointment of a bishop or an appointment of a foreign bishop from France in particular. It was very vague, typical of that language. Well, he said this is a religious matter and doesn't concern us, but nevertheless he forwarded it to the United States Congress, which was the supreme governing body at that time until the United States Constitution was adopted in 1789. This occurred in 1783. And the president of Congress at the time was James Madison, and he wrote back that this was a religious matter, which technically was really left to the states, but not the United States government. Even our First Amendment talks about Congress shall make no laws.
Now you've painted the background to the picture, why don't we paint in the key players, beginning with the popes, of course. Pius IX?
He appeared at first to be progressive. So the United States established ministerial relations with the Papal States. Now that lasted until 1867, at which point, because of this radical Congress that we've spoken about before, what they call the radical Reconstructionists, they cut off funding for that in 1867, beginning for fiscal 1868. The same time they cut off funding for an American minister to Portugal. Now, by the way, I'm using the term minister because the United States had no ambassadors anywhere until the 1890s, because it was following through on the first president's notion, George Washington's notion, there should be no entangling alliances. So as a result of it, we had the lower grade of diplomatic mission, as did the United Kingdom with the Holy See from 1915 until 1982. They had a minister. Yeah, they didn't have an ambassador. So the term is still there, but that's why the United States didn't have any ambassadors until the 1890s. You can find this on the United States State Department's homepage for heads of missions.
So the United States continued, technically speaking, anyway.
It became a very heated problem. It was suggested during World War I, but put down immediately.
The next step in this process was Cardinal Pacelli, the future Pius XII.
It came up again in 1936 when Cardinal Pacelli paid a visit to the United States. And Bishop Spellman at that time had been working on this since 1932. And so was the apostolic delegate, Amleto Cicognani, at the time. He was talking to the president by May of 1933 about the possibility of diplomatic relations. And Roosevelt was sort of, frankly, playing along with the Catholics. He addressed Archbishop Cicognani at one point as Mr. Ambassador and then said, I hope soon that will be your title. Of course, it wouldn't have been, but nevertheless, he obviously was playing to Cicognani and through Cicognani to the Holy See, because that was reported back to Pacelli.
What you're saying, Catholics weren't exactly popular in the United States at that time.
1928, there had been a very painful election. Governor Al Smith, a Catholic of New York, was nominated as the Democratic candidate, and he was defeated mainly because of the Catholic issue. Although, strangely, he carried the states in the Deep South, where there was much more prejudice. The Upper South, states like Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, were not covered.
So what happened during World War II? Any progress made on the path to improving diplomatic relations?
A compromise during the war period by appointing a personal representative. His name was Myron Taylor. But when the war broke out, He had an assistant, Harold Tittman, and he had to have some diplomatic title to allow him to move into the Vatican with other allied diplomats. So he was named chargé d'affaires. So technically speaking, that does mean diplomatic relations.
And after the war?
Now, in 1950, Myron Taylor resigned, and the United States never informed the Vatican. They just closed the office down. So that's where it stood. In 1951, President Truman did nominate General Mark Clark as the ambassador to the Vatican. There is no such entity for diplomatic purposes. It's to the Holy See. And there was no chance of his ever being approved because the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, which would have to approve this to get it on the floor of the Senate would have to give its approval for the appointment of an ambassador. And the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee was a senator from Texas. Texans hated General Clark because he had used the 36th Texas Infantry Division in the Battle of the Rapido River, and it was decimated, literally. So they thought he was a butcher. So there's no chance of his nomination ever going through, although he did have good relations with the Holy See. In 1954, Truman said that he was in favor. By that time, he was out of office. It became one of the two crucial issues in the campaign of John Kennedy for president of the United States. Was he in favor of diplomatic relations with the Vatican? And was he in favor of financial federal aid to parochial schools?
Of course, John Kennedy was the first Catholic president of the United States.
He was the first Catholic president, the second one to run. And he said in regard to relations with the Vatican, stressing that because they used that term, he was opposed to it because the turmoil surrounding approval of an ambassador would undermine any benefit that it may have. In regard to aid to parochial schools, he said that he would have to follow the Constitution. I always like to use the distinction when somebody says it's unconstitutional. Well, that's the interpretation of the Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court has been known to change. So therefore, I prefer to say the interpretation given by the Supreme Court. But anyway, that's where the question rested then. And there was hesitation as to whether or not the president could even have any type of meeting with the Pope. He actually did come over and meet with Paul VI. They tested it ahead of time because his vice president, Lyndon Johnson, had been to see the Pope, and then Jacqueline Kennedy came, and there was no real upheaval because John the 23rd presented a different image of the church and so forth and so on.
Our guest today was historian and well-known author, Jesuit Professor Gerald Fogarty. You've been listening to Vatican Radio. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.